Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Javier, I have a big announcement. I really want to tell you what it is, but I'm going to wait till Friday. Cue the booze. This isn't necessarily the biggest story of the show, but WWE's got to stop having babyfaces turn crowds against them by saying we're saving something even bigger for Fox's SmackDown on Friday instead of Raw. That took the wind out of the sails of the crowd a little bit going into the main event, where Rhea Ripley secured, shock of shocks, an advantage for the heels going into War Games, beating Asuka pretty decisively. Yeah, any thoughts on the tactic that WWE uses, which is, you know, I could tell you, but I'm not gonna, and the crowd boos.
Yeah, I mean, if that's something that they use with the heels, like, oh, we're gonna have a match, just not today.
Right.
What makes you possibly think that that's gonna get over with the baby faces? And I mean, there's a trope that they use all the time, which is when they're about to talk, the music plays and the heels come out. They could have done that.
Yep.
You know, our person is, and then should they come out? We don't care who it is, whoever it is, we're going to beat, and, you know, and get involved immediately. That's what you have to do.
I know. What'd you make of the Asuka Rhea Ripley main event in terms of the story they told and the finish and just the job that they did hyping the women's War Games? I know the third hour of Raw is the least watched of the three, but it did get a I mean, when Belair finally stepped into the ring with her partners, I was like, oh, that's right, there's a women's War Games. Like, it didn't get a lot of focus earlier in the show, but it did carry, you know, the last half hour of the third hour quite a bit, and that was, you know, the closing scene was a pile of women that Asuka dove onto. Did they do a good enough job building that up and, yes, teasing SmackDown for people who might have holiday plans and weren't going to watch?
Okay, I'm going to go with a yes and no here. I'm going to hedge, right? Because I think it's fine for like a normal pay-per-view match, but this is War Games. This is like a big deal. So I don't think they built it like to be really worth it. They tried. And I got to give them, you know, hand it to them because Bianca Belair talked about how, you know, we've been at war for how long. It just and this might be just a personal feeling that it doesn't feel like it's like War Games kind of thing. I don't know why. But I do give them, you know, props because that was, they did like touch upon, I mean, they didn't hit the women's War Games match heavy until the end, but you did have, Rhea Ripley and, Mia Yim involved early on, with the Judgment Days, versus, Brutes segment. And then you had them again, have that brawl in the back. And then eventually, you know, so it did like it, there was a thread throughout the show with it. So I thought that was good. But yes, for like a regular match, I kind of would, and I think this is more of a case of like, you know, it's a date on the calendar. We got to get this match, and you know, we got to do it.
Yeah, I was wondering if they could overcome, I think, that vibe, you know, because, I mean, I know Survivor Series has a Thanksgiving tradition, but people are thinking about, you know, their family. They're thinking about travel. They're thinking about a long weekend. They might be thinking about Black Friday specials. They might be dreading the holidays. They might be looking forward to them. And I, you know, Thanksgiving was a big traditional night for pro wrestling to go out to the arena in a lot of territories in the 70s and 80s. But, and I know Tony Khan has taken away Labor Day and Memorial Day from people who like to enjoy wrestling-free, you know, three-day weekends away from the routine. And it's, you know, some people embrace that and some don't. But it is – I think it's difficult because I think even wrestlers are kind of thinking about that. And we've broken away from, you know, the Thanksgiving tradition, but now it's on Thanksgiving weekend. And I don't know. It just – and besides that, it's also just weird because it's a brand-new format with a brand-new match, and it does have a bit of a calendar – event feel to it rather than a few that organically needed to be settled in the cage. And part of the problem with that, not to introduce this as a topic also, is when you do both a men's and a women's War Games match on the same show, it really feels manufactured. It really feels like we decided that this would be interesting, compelling, a good sales pitch for you to tune in. So we've got two War Games matches, and it's just a matter of time to figure out who we're going to sort of decide are going to have a grudge match inside a double ring cage. And that's just not the organic way a match of this type should happen. But, you know, we've been complaining about that for a long time. There was a chance for maybe a fresh start here, but we're not getting it.
Yeah, the only one that kind of made sense, the only one of those stipulation matches that makes sense is Elimination Chamber, because it's a, you know, match to determine either your number one contender or an actual match with multiple people have a chance to win the title. That made sense because it's more of like the event. It's kind of like Royal Rumble.
Right.
The event.
Totally.
And Money in the Bank for the same thing, because those are not matches that you'd go to settle grudges. I mean, you could have grudges be settled in there because, you know, the nature of storytelling and draws more people into the match. But that's the thing. Yeah, War Games falls under the same category as Hell in a Cell. And I know they were retiring Hell in a Cell as a pay-per-view for the very reasons that it doesn't really make sense for War Games to be the actual headliner of the Survivor Series. I mean, even the multi-person match, you know, that makes sense because, you know, you could have, you know, the way that it used to be back in the day where it was just like, you know, a group of people, closely aligned people or mildly aligned people, you know, facing against people that they've been feuding for, you know, so you'd have more of a, there's almost more of a exhibition game kind of thing. So, you know, but I understand why they, you know, it'll be fun, but, you know, yeah, it kind of doesn't feel like it's really worthy.
But as far as the men's match go, you kind of talked about how they weaved a variety of things in there. They opened the show with Kevin Owens addressing why he's in the match, which is primarily to go after Roman Reigns. And he's drawing from their history. I think he's doing a good job positioning himself, framing himself based on his history with Roman as a future threat to its title. And he also threw in the nugget that he doesn't have an issue with Sami Zayn. He thinks he's a brother, says no matter what he has going on now, he still, you know, looks at him like as a brother. So I think that's going to be interesting too. They planted that seed of how will KO and Sami interact in the match. Will Sami be respectful? Will he take a cheap shot? How will that play out? Could he have split loyalties? They didn't lean on that too hard, so maybe they won't tell that story in the match. They lean more on KO and Roman being an issue. But, you know, I think they did a better job with the men's War Games match making sense of this rivalry, but neither of them are great. Neither of them feel as organic as I think they should. But your thoughts on the hype tonight for the men's match?
Yeah, kind of the same boat. The people in that match are a little bit more closely connected, because the problem with the women is that, yeah, the core group, the core three that are wrestling each other, they feel like, okay, we could have like a big match for it, but they both have two like extra people thrown in there that kind of don't like, we're just putting in there because they fit. Men's match is a little bit better because you have your the bloodline is just one full unit. And then you have, you know, the three tag teams. Andrew is tightly linked to Sheamus, and you have Kevin Owens, who's actually tightly linked to the other side with Sami Zayn. So it feels a little bit stronger in that respect. Again, weakened by the fact that you have the two matches at that night, and like with a little bit longer period of time maybe built, you could have actually probably gotten to a worthy one. But I think that's mm-hmm. closer to the more worthy one between that and the women one, which is weird because the women have actually been feuding since SummerSlam.
Yes, yep. And by the way, I mean, it seems as if Becky Lynch is going to be the mystery partner, because I don't know who else would fit the hype, the build that they've given it. I think people will be surprised if it's not. I think they'll be also pleased if it is. What do you think?
The three names I have, the disappointing one is Candice LeRae, because, you know, she's been previously attached to them. I don't know what injury status are with any of these people, by the way. My number, the second one would be Beth Phoenix, because of the Rhea Ripley connection. And then Becky Lynch would be the most, you know, the one I would most like to see, and probably the one that should be most expected. I would guess that they're hedging. If she's ready to come back, she's the one, and if she's not ready to come back, it'll be either Candice or Beth Phoenix, because I think all three of those are good options.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then get phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, November 21st, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts. Join us tomorrow on our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where Jason Powell will be joining me. And after just 2 weeks, because last time he waited four, so we're trying to stick to an average of every 3 weeks if we can. And so we'll probably talk a little less Vikings than normal, or maybe we'll have I don't know, maybe we'll try to talk things out at the end of the podcast to make ourselves feel better about things. Jason can provide some insight on what happened. I went dark on media coverage since yesterday, Javier.
You kind of stole, as I was saying, because I was going to bring up the Vikings, because I saw the game, and I was like, well, at least I saw the game to the point where they decided to change it over to the Bengals game on account of the Vikings player having families that shouldn't be watching this murder. so I felt bad, because I was rooting for the Vikings to, you know, they beat the Dolphins. But granted, Tua was out. And I believe so was Bridgewater, so on our third string. And I'm like, well, you know, the better the Vikings do, the stronger our opponents are in case of any tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, pulling for the Vikings, and then I like turn on the game and I'm like, oh, this is not going well.
No, it wasn't. I watched it on delay, and I got a random person just blurted out the Vikings were losing about 2.5 hours into after kickoff. So I knew we weren't blowing them out. I didn't know what the ultimate finish was or the score, but I was a little bit, you know, braced for potential disappointment. So anyway, tomorrow, Jason Powell joins you. If you want to email questions for the flagship that we'll be recording tomorrow, dropping tomorrow night, send those to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We will be looking back at Full Gear, looking ahead to Survivor Series, and much more. And you can help steer the conversation and bring up topics or rant or ask us questions. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. By the way, we also have coming up tonight on the Blue Logo Show a 2+ hour interview with Sean Waltman from 5 years ago. That's fantastic. I just want to point you to that. Hit refresh on the blue feed. Search Wade Keller. Subscribe to the red feed. This show. Subscribe to the blue feed, our regular podcast. And take time, if you can, to listen to the interview with Sean from 5 years ago. Some fascinating stuff, including whether he stands by his theory. He wasn't alone, but way back in the day that Bret Hart and Vince McMahon were in on the Survivor Series Montreal double cross. They were in on it together. And so he updates his stance on that. That was it's been a while since I asked him if he still believed in that. So, but a real good insight into what WWE style is in terms of, you know, the rest is kind of naming or devising a WWE style of wrestling and whether he thought that changed. The fans have changed over the years. Some Roman Reigns analysis, Braun Strowman rising to the top. Lots of cool stuff. A lot of it timeless. And and Sean's just a great friend, known him since we were both teenagers. And it's always a fun conversation that y'all can listen in on. So that's going up around the time of this show, actually late Monday night. So be on the lookout for that over on the blue feed. The other voice you hear, I've referenced, is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor. He contributes pay-per-view previews, among other things, to the Torch. He'll have his Survivor Series preview coming up later this week. And Javier, it is great to have you back.
Always good to join you, Wade.
Yeah. Can I say who you went to a hockey game with?
Well, I'm fine with it. I don't know if he is.
Why would he want to hide it? You know what?
I don't know privacy.
All right, hey, that's fair. Javier, you know what we'll do? We'll ask him, and then we'll tell people Friday.
Okay.
You see what I did there?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It took me a second. I'll be honest, it took me a second.
That's tremendous. All right, so we're here to talk SmackDown, or we're here to talk Raw. We encourage you to give us a call. We're probably going to go a little short tonight. It's a holiday week. We went a little shorter on Friday also. So if you do want to call, call early or forever hold your peace, or at least till like Wednesday night after Dynamite, or email us on the flagship. Our number, if you want to participate, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that will let us know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. I think on our show, that's what I'm going to do. If you download our show and you want to listen live, which we encourage you to do, it's a nice ad-free experience to do the live stream. You can find a link at the top and bottom of my TV reports during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night at pwtorch.com. That's pwtorch.com. You can also check our Twitter page at pwtorch and find the link there around the time the show's come to an end. And you can also just go directly to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us. And if it works out in your schedule, if you watch Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown live and then want to hear some live post-show, talk radio show style, and hopefully participate, that's how you do it. All right, so let's go to phone calls. And we'll sprinkle in emails as we go along here too. We'll start with Justin in Charlotte. Justin, welcome to the show. What'd you think of Raw? Go ahead, Justin.
Hello?
Hello. Yep, there you are. We're here. You're live.
Oh, wow.
You called us. We didn't call you. As I
Hello?
Said. Hey, Justin.
Hey. Oh, sorry about that. I've had my Bluetooth on. I thought the show tonight did a pretty good job promoting the show. There's some highlights for me and some interesting tidbits they're doing. First thing I want to talk about tonight was Austin Theory promo backstage. I remember talking to you, Wade, not too long ago about just a change in Austin Theory's his presentation just changing without the selfie stuff, just more serious, more ruthless side. And I thought he cut a great promo tonight. They was able to get him a win. And I just like this focus of Austin Theory. I can see this guy, if they can build him up for the next 6 to 8 months, I can see this guy being who perhaps WWE wanted him to be back under Vince McMahon. But I thought he was two straight, strong weeks for Austin Theory. What you guys think about the approach with him tonight?
Javier, I'll throw to you first on that one. I mean, definitely a pivot, you know, starting last week for his character, other than when he ran away at the end of it all, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. I like the promo tonight. I like pretty much everything he's done, the ruthlessness of the way he went after Mustafa Ali, standing in the ring when Lashley came in. I did not, you know, I understand that they're also making Lashley look like a monster. I didn't like the him running away part. I thought that he should have gotten the better of Lashley, you know, the moment that he ran him into the or tried to run him into the corner, or when he hit him with a chair. I think that would have been better if he would have gotten at least a couple of hits in before, you know, leaving, you know, in a more dignified way than running out and then throwing Mustafa Ali into Lashley's way. Yeah. So I thought that was a bit of a misstep, because that harkened more towards the previous version of the selfie stick Austin Theory. So outside of that little step, I thought everything else was really well done, and he felt like you know standing in front of him when he did was actually, you know, like a ballsy move for his part, and showed like, you know, more maturity on you know, the character's end.
What do you think they're up to, Javier? Like, is this, I mean, if we set aside that he ran away, is this trying to just get him to be seen as a more serious person, a more serious threat coming up short in Money in the Bank? It's to set him up for John Cena and just to, you know, kind of test the waters of him being a potential future main eventer. And the idea being, you know, he's really good at comedy, but that's not main event, you know, and I bring it up often. You know, Kurt Angle did probably more comedy than he should have in order to be the draw that he could have been. He ended up being a thoroughly entertaining TV character who filled TV time really well. But in terms of being that kind of serious centerpiece star who would be talked about, you know, for the next couple of generations, they leaned on his comedy so much, I don't think it worked out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm it's definitely like to elevate him to the next stage. How high that stage is going to be, you know, we'll see. But considering the fact that, you know, his name has been in the same, you know, circles as John Cena, that is, you know, a big time match for him to be involved with. So yeah, it's definitely to set him up and build him up to whatever the next stage he's going to be. But the one thing I'm actually kind of interested in is that this to me has the feel of the one hand's doing something. While, you know, magic trick where one hand, you know, you're focusing on one hand while the other hand is doing some manipulations on the side. I'm curious as to how Mustafa Ali is going to tie into all this. Because when he was first destroyed by Lashley, it made me think that You know, I thought it was really emasculating for his character, but then he shows up on SmackDown, he puts on gutsy performance against Ricochet. They sold him, so I don't think that he fell out of favor. You know, they sold the fact that he was wrestling Hurd and talking about that. And then he has this, like, basically a squash match against Theory, and then gets destroyed by Lashley again at the end. So this tells me, and we're not meant to look at what's going on there, because it's about Lashley, it's about Theory, it's about Seth Rollins. I think that something's going to happen with Mustafa Ali. I don't know if it's going to be a heel change, it's going to be a character change, it's going to be a personality change. I think there's something going on there. I'd keep an eye out for that, unless he's not re-signing his contract and they're just jobbing him out until he leaves the company.
I'm not ruling that out either.
Outside of that, but the fact that how commentary treated him on last Saturday, I think there's something else going on. I think it's going to end up in some way, shape, or form being a more of a four-way situation as opposed to a three. And I think it might be possible that Mustafa Ali actually ends up in a higher place while he feuds probably with Austin Theory, since they're, you know, given the level the two of them are, and then being like, you know, kind of that being like the Daniel Garcia Wheeler Yuta feud of these, you know, people you're trying to elevate.
How do you think Theory does in this role? Like, can he get away with trying to be serious? Like, it'd be hard to take Chad Gable seriously at this point. You know, if he was like, oh, I'm going to be serious. It would kind of even tough with Otis. Who's a wrestler in the past who went from comedy to trying to be more serious? And it was just like, it was tough to buy. Like, has Theory gone down that road too much? Or is he actually good at this? And again, I'm having to block out him running away from the ring like a chicken to really focus on what I think mostly they're trying to do with him. But does serious Theory work?
I think it can, because, I mean, he's a decent promo. I mean, I really like his promos, not necessarily in the terms of quantity, but in, like, what they set out to do. Not that it was bad quality, I'm saying, but, you know, obviously it's not a Mox level, you know, Mox level or MJF level, you know, promo, but it was good for what they're setting out to do. And particularly how he's saying that I'm not the man of tomorrow, I'm not the protege. I'm not, you know, all the different nicknames he's had, mm-hmm. saying that he's the future. He's saying, no, I'm the now, so you got to take me serious now. And again, except for him running away, he's, you know, the fact that he's called out Seth Rollins and not, like, shied away from him, called out, you know, Lashley, not shied to get away from him until, you know, he hit him with a chair and Lashley no-sold it and, you know, that stuff. I think he could, you know, and just see where he develops. I mean, I've been really high on Austin Theory ever since, you know, his Evolve days. I've liked him a lot. So
yeah.
You got to take that into consideration. So I may be higher on him than some others, but I do think that, you know, he will be able to grow into it. Again, you got to make sure he has the right opponents. He's put in the right situations. Try to keep him from being silly. You know, he could be a guy where an example would be someone who was in comedy stuff. Granted, it was higher level comedy stuff. Would be Triple H, you know, DX Triple H when he became the King of Kings. So that was somebody who, you know, I'm not gonna say he's on that level, but like the same path is there for him.
Justin, back to you, and I'm kind of curious what you think of what we just talked about.
Yeah. So. I feel like this is the right trajectory. How I look at what they're doing with Austin Theory is a lot like how they're doing the NBA, where you got a team that has to break, they have to tear down a team and rebuild it to be a contender. And I kind of look at it with Austin Theory, where Levesque pretty much had to remove what the Vince regime version of Austin Theory to kind of build him up in his own image. And with him losing the Money in the Bank, with him being down as far as he can go as a character, now he has nowhere to go but up. So I feel like I can see what Levesque is doing with him, and it's just all about consistency. Is he going to get a three-week run where he wins matches and then all of a sudden he's doing 50-50 booking? Also, I think it's also important who you put him in the ring with. I think him being involved with Rollins and being involved with Bobby Lashley and being involved with guys that matter from week to week and month to month is also important for his growth, because you're only as good as who you're around. You know, what's holding, I feel, Matt Riddle down a lot is he's around Chad Gable and Otis. He's not around the Randy Ortons that he was. He doesn't feel like the same type of character.
Yep.
So I feel like Austin Theory who you put him around with and how consistent you are with his wins and making the crowd understand that he's an important character on the show, I think is important, especially going to the road to WrestleMania season.
Very good. Justin, what else have you got for us?
Tonight, once again, it's Monday Night Football, and they just arbitrarily just throw a women's match in the main event. I know this match was promoted days before, but did they really expect the crowd to be in this match? I mean, I don't really feel like they did a great job advertising it. I mean, I don't even know what I saw it on social media, but I don't know what the exact time was that an actual woman was shown on screen as far as the performer. I don't know how they felt that was going to build up this War Games match. I agree with you, what you said before the show started, beginning of the show, as far as holding off until the day before the show of who the fifth competitor is. I mean, if you're in a live crowd, it's just like, well, thanks. You know, we came all the way to the show and we thought we was getting a reveal, but we got to wait a few more days. I don't know. I just feel like this women's division is just on Raw. It's just cold. This feud has went on for a very long time. I don't even really see who Bianca's next opponent is. Maybe it's Rhea Ripley, but he's so attached to the whole Judgment Day thing that her going after the title doesn't. How do you guys feel about the division going forward after this match? Because I really don't see a whole lot of hot programs being made up right now.
Javier.
That is a good question, because pretty much all the important women are involved in this program. So,
yep.
I mean, that's kind of the issue. I think that they need to, you know, they've added a few pieces, you know, reclaiming Nikki Cross, Mia Yim. So they're doing some stuff, but but it doesn't help that, you know, they're grabbing multiple pieces from different parts that weren't part of the 3-versus-3 scenario to have this one match. So essentially the entire division is there. I'm also waiting to see what they do with Doudrop, if anything, and other, you know, maybe bring some people up from NXT. We will, you know, they do are in different desperate need of something. Because even let's say Becky Lynch comes back, who is she going to feud with? You know, what's going to happen there? Because who's the next heel? I mean, is she going to then start feuding with Rhea Ripley? And then, like, who's Bianca's going to feud with? So they are lacking in star power on that side.
Yeah. This is only tangentially related, but what's your hunch, Javier, on the future of a draft or a brand split? I haven't even seen credible, like, rumors. It just seems like, yeah. Maybe Paul Levesque still deciding.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, right now it doesn't really make any sense until you hit WrestleMania. Until after WrestleMania. You know, because what kind of is the point of really shaking things up? Particularly since you kind of see a lot of the storylines where they're heading. Likely a KO and Sami Zayn versus the Usos. Theory and, and you're going to have a lot of people theoretically coming, you know, a lot of quote-unquote part-timers. I'm sure probably Brock Lesnar is going to be involved in something. You're going to have, you know, maybe Cena and Theory, Rock and Roman. So you have those, which don't matter. You know, in those cases, it doesn't really matter on who's on what brand. But then, like, you know, and like today we had a bunch of people from different brands showing up. So it's kind of loosey-goosey to begin with. I would like them to solidify things, you know, get to WrestleMania, get through with what you're about to do. Oh, Edge coming back also. You know, so that's another one. You have Cody coming back likely sooner rather than later. So, you know, so you have a lot of stuff going on. And, yeah, I mean, I'd solidify things after WrestleMania and after the dust settles after WrestleMania and, like, you know, maybe even have, like, the WrestleMania Raw be the first night of the draft.
Yeah, I do kind of like that. I like the post-WrestleMania reset. I mean, it can mess up a little bit if Levesque still wants to do some sort of event after Mania, like Backlash, WrestleMania Backlash, where it's, you know, just WrestleMania rematches. And I get you get a little two-for-one. out of some WrestleMania hype when you do two pay-per-views in a row with them or do rematches, but a draft could shake things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justin, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with Javier. I think post WrestleMania is the way to go. It just muddies the waters. Where you got people showing up on both shows anyway. I mean, the person, this is a Raw, pretty much a Raw Women's War Games, yet the fifth member is going to be announced on a different brand that none of them are on. So I just think they didn't just keep it the way it is. And then post-Mania, like they used to do the Superstar Shake-Up about a handful of years ago, just stick to that. Two more things I want to talk about. Sure. Seth Rollins promo was weird because he's a babyface on the depth chart, but then he's talking about injuring Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't really know what to make of this promo. It's like, is he a bad guy? Is he a tweener? Why is he a babyface internally, but he's mentioned injuring one of the top babyfaces? That promo was just, and he's still doing a laugh. I feel like that's a heel mannerism. I don't think they know what to do with the Seth Rollins character. What did you guys think about the promo?
There's just way too much of this, you know, pick 'em fans. You get to cheer for who you want, or we're going to give you a reason to cheer, and then a second later give you a reason to boo. We saw it with MJF and Moxley. We saw it with Saray and Britt Baker. It's just, it's permeating both AEW and WWE these days. And, I mean, who is consistently admirable and likable in this U.S. title triple threat situation? And I'm totally with Justin. Just let's simplify things and give fans like really good reason to naturally want to cheer for someone and root against someone, and save the ambiguity for or the pick 'em for when it's like two mega stars who you just want to see because it's so novel. Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually made note that this is probably one of my favorite Seth Rollins promos, if you subtracted the laughs, because it was the most babyface-ish promo he did, minus, you know, a couple lines here and there. And I'm like, if you cleaned it up a little bit, this is all you need to do. But yeah, there were some lines in the laughs. I'm like, okay, so they're obviously still treating him. They haven't turned him babyface yet. But you're saying that he actually is listed internally as a babyface.
I believe there was a report by PW Insider, if I'm not mistaken, that said internally he was a babyface. I mean, maybe it's more of a rumor, but
no,
I totally believe it, because there has been a shift in his character, but it just doesn't feel like it's gone all the way there. And like, you know, the last, and you know, and I can kind of understand the. I mean, it's kind of a heelish thing to do and a dickish thing to do, but. His affectations and his, like, the, you know, the way he acts, it's kind of like that superstar rock star kind of character that's going to rub some people the wrong way. I'm kind of beginning to enjoy it. It's beginning to wear on me and grow on me. But again, like, some of the stuff he said kind of like signposts him still as more heelish in nature. If you clean that up and just push in the direction of being a babyface, that's all you really need to do. Some people are still going to find him annoying, but you know, but I had the same feeling, because then, like, you know, Theory is obviously the heel, you know, straight up. And then when Lashley came out, there were moments where he felt like he was, when he came out and he confronted, Austin Theory, he felt like he was the babyface, but then he killed Mustafa Ali. And now it's like, okay, well now he's being a heel. So he's another one that's kind of like in the gray zone. I don't know if it's the gray zone of, like, we don't know, you know, oh, let people chant whatever they want to, or if they're in the plans of actually solidifying these people through this feud, and we're going to get, like, a solidified Lashley heel turn, a solidified Seth Rollins face turn, whatever we're going to do with Mustafa Ali, because, again, I still think he might be involved in this. And then we already have the personality change in Austin Theory. We mentioned this with the AEW pay-per-view that, you know, hopefully by the pay-per-view, you know, things are going to be settled by the end of the pay-per-view. And I kind of feel like that's the same situation in this case of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin, anything else you want to add?
Last thing I want to touch on, was during the main event, they just it was a weird dialogue where Corey Graves just mentioned that Alexa Bliss didn't seem engaged in teaming with Bianca Belair or being involved in War Games. I don't know. Sometimes Corey Graves just throws in things to try to make the story make more sense, or is he trying to make a story? I don't really know where that came from. Maybe it's something to watch on Sunday, but I just noticed he just mentioned that kind of arbitrarily during that match, and it's just, like I said, maybe they're telling the story and we're going to see more of it on Saturday, but I don't know if you guys even picked up on that, but he just mentioned that during the match, and I don't know if they call themselves building towards that. I mean, Alexa and Bray Wyatt will be on the same show Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, they've been that's come up now and then since, you know, Bliss has been back. Javier, do you think they're up to something? They probably are, right?
I think this is one of those they're turning reality, you know, some reality into and working that into the story, because since her return, Bliss hasn't really been like, they really haven't had like a direction for her to go. She is essentially a replacement. I think she might have mentioned that she was a replacement for Becky Lynch when Becky Lynch went down. That she wasn't going to be involved in this, and there's not a really real direction. And she on Twitter did say that she's not sure of her character, because this character is the one that's the closest to the person that she is, but she's not comfortable with that. And I think that they've kind of it was a couple weeks ago, I think, where she became more assertive, and is when she started actually cutting promos. And there was a point where she basically for the trio, she was the one who was actually front and center cutting the promos, not Bianca Belair, for that one segment. And she was, you know, and that she was more confident, and it felt like it was kind of more riding the ship. And I think this might have also been around the same time where TVs around her started flashing the moth. So I'm thinking that part of what they're saying is to signpost like there's going to be a change in her character, very likely in War Games, that we might finally see like the, you know, something with the whole Bray Wyatt thing, and something going on with her. So I do think that it's not an accident that Corey Graves brought it up yet again during this segment.
Justin, anything else before we move on to other calls here?
No, that's it. I appreciate you guys. It's fun talking to you guys as always. I'm going to see you listen to the show. Thanks, guys.
Sure, you bet. Thanks, Justin. All right, our number, if you want to join us, is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'd love to hear from you, first-time callers, regulars, semi-regulars, whatever else there is. All right, let's go to Brad in New York next. Brad, thanks for calling up. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Javier. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I was in the middle of a major, major move. I actually moved to Florida for some family reasons and different things, but moving is the worst. I know you guys have done it at some point in your lives. Just try not to do it too often, because, boy, is it a nightmare.
we're in Florida now.
But Northeast Florida, like kind of by St. Augustine. I don't know if you know like that area, but, yeah, kind of that sort of area. But it's really beautiful here, but – man, moving is just a nightmare. But, regardless, you know, look, I did, like Justin said, find that main event, like, a little weird. A lot because, you know, these stipulations of, oh, who's going to get the advantage in the War Games match? Like, does anyone really care about that? It almost reminds me of, like, the Star game where the AL-NL winner gets home field in the World Series. Like, no one's really rooting for that outcome because, you know, it's just too disconnected, I think. And I just, you know, I find that very hard to kind of embrace as, like, wow, I got to really care about this because they're going to have the man advantage or whatever. And, you know, there was a few matches like that tonight, but, you know, on another point, I think it's kind of evident that this show needs to go to 2 hours. I think points, especially over the last few weeks, and for me, the honeymoon stage with Levesque is over. Like, I'm not in love with kind of the way that he does the show a lot of the time. We think that he's done some good things, and there's been some cool things, but there's a lot of things that he does that I think just make the show a little bit less fun. Like, he doesn't seem to be a huge fan of anything comedic, which is ironic because Javier brought up, you know, how many comedic things he's done in the past as a character in WWE, but I just feel like, you know, even like totally stripping Austin Theory, the new vicious Austin Theory, then you got the new vicious Viking Raiders, then you got the new vicious Bobby Lashley now, you got the, like, it just seems like a one-trick pony type of act where the character sheds their lighthearted gimmick a little bit and they come back as this very serious character. And I noticed tonight, you know, there was very little in terms of comedy. I mean, the most comedy you're getting on this show, and a lot of people don't want the comedy, and I understand that, but the most you're getting on the show is a Chad Gable thank you and a kiss on Otis's cheek. That's pretty much the most comedy that you're getting now, and I do think there's a happy medium. You know, I know yeah. I just kind of threw out a lot of things right there. I have a couple other things I wanted to touch on quickly, but yeah.
Yeah, hold those thoughts if you can. Yeah, hold those thoughts if you can. Javier, yeah, go ahead and pick up on what you want, Javier, and then I'll jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I would throw also the Miz Gargano stuff to that, although it was much more shorter in this segment, and it was more Miz getting his over on Gargano, so it wasn't as, you know, lighthearted because, you know, almost you know, destroying Gargano. But that's also been more of one of the more lighthearted ones with the as lighthearted as stalking you can be, but you know, the way that was played off. And then there's also the hint, because I mean the Tozawa thing seems that's also going to be maybe more comedic, and God, I hope so, because the Corbin, if that's what the Corbin thing goes to, I would much prefer something along those lines than the stuff they've been doing thus far with Corbin. But yeah, I mean, and when it's 3 hours, yeah, I mean, and Triple H does have, I mean, he does do comedic, because like in NXT, he had some, you know, comedic storylines, the stuff, and particularly, it was also the Gargano, you know, the stuff with the Gargano and Candice and the Gargano way and stuff like that, you know, and I know, you know, different people's mileages may vary. He's done that, it just doesn't feel like there's like a segment set aside for it, and right now everything is like kind of pulling in one direction, so... and who knows, maybe we would have seen more truth if more truth involvement the 24/7 title if he hadn't gotten injured.
I don't like that to that. Brad, anything else that you in particular want me to respond to, or do you want to bring up your other points?
No, I mean I do want to hear what you think of them maybe going to 2 hours. Do you think that's just strictly like USA will never let them do that, or do you think, because look, man, it's just a little too much. Like, to me, if this show went to 2 hours, it would be great. And you could fit more things in. You could shorten the matches up a little bit. I mean, you see the crowd nearly every week. They're sitting on their hands. Like, I went to the Raw at Madison Square Garden, you know, right after Triple H took over. And even I noticed it then, like, it's just too long. Like, no one wants it that long. It's kind of like, you know, like what they say about baseball. Like, you know, these regular season baseball games are 3.5 hours. They're too long. Like, let's get them down to 2 hours. Let's get them down to 2.5 hours. Like, I feel like it's the same thing about Raw, and I feel like you kind of have to change with the times, you know, a little bit, and maybe, you know, think about going 8 to 10, you know?
I'm totally, if we go back to 2 hours for Raw, I don't know that there's many wrestling fans who would argue that. I mean, some do, that just like more the better. You know, some people have that attitude, but I think a two-hour show would leave you wanting more, and I think the booking would be tighter. I think the crowd would be hotter. I just think everything would be a little bit to quite a bit better. You know, but, I mean, we talked about this every week for the first couple of years, Raw with 3 hours, and then sort of gave up. There's, you know, a lot of revenue that comes from that third hour that I don't think, you know, the network and WWE want to give up. But if that's the case, why not do a fourth hour? Why not do a fifth hour? Well, the reason is because there'd be diminishing returns and they'd burn out the crowd. Well, the argument is then not more hours is better, because everybody would agree more hours has eventually a negative effect on everything. So it's just a matter of when is too much. And, you know, I mean, Paul Levesque hinted, you know, implied, you know, 2 hours would be better. But there are economic realities, and, you know, he inherited this deal. I think Raw would draw better ratings overall at 2 hours than on average it does with three, but I don't know if they'd be able to make up that ad revenue. But I think everybody else would benefit, and I think the product would be better, and I think people would just like Raw more. And I think there's some intangible value to that. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not ruling it out. I don't know. Javier, do you have any hope?
I'm not really. I mean, honestly, I think the only show that I didn't mind being 3 hours, yet then again, I was younger, was the WCW days. But that's because they like, the first hour was clearly signposted, like, almost a different show with the mainly being Lucha Libre and, like, different commentary team and everything. And it was really – it almost was like a one-hour show followed by a two-hour show, which, you know, broke things up. But yeah, I mean, I think of all your co-hosts, Wade, I'm the one who usually, when I co-host, I usually bring up the, oh my God, this is 3 hours. I wasn't going to today, but yeah, that wasn't one of my notes. Cause it, you know, like at 9 o'clock, I'm like, okay, well, we've got this. I'm like, what other segments are we missing? And then I look, it's like, it's only been 1 hour. We have two more hours of this. And like, I'm already like, I can't think of what I'm excited that's still coming up. And then I remembered Corbin, and I remembered Riddle, and I remembered some of the other stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what they're going to hit. But yeah, I mean, and it ends up with overexposure, because I mean, yeah, they've added more talent, but you know, we're seeing the same people on TV every single day. You know, I don't want it to be like AEW, where like a guy disappears for, you know, shows up for 2 weeks and then disappears for like 3 months before he comes out with like a, you know, 50 win streak in Dark, and then is ready for a challenge for a belt. I don't want that, but I also don't need to see, you know, Riddle wrestle Gable every week in some sort of permutation. Not that I love the match. I thought this was one of my favorite matches in a while. But, you know, again, it's like I don't really need to see this every single week.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's just sometimes, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Scarcity of some of the top stars is a positive. So, yeah. Brad, what else?
Yeah, it's just a major investment. You don't want it to feel like a chore. And, you know, 5 hours a week,
yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, it's just too much pay-per-view. But regardless, you know, on Levesque, you know, like my other criticism of him is that you have all these people that are making comebacks and different things, whether it's Mia Yim or whether it's whatever. Like, he's given you no reason whatsoever to even care about them. Like, am I rooting for Mia Yim in Survivor Series? Like, do I care about the OC? Like, has he given me any reason to care about an Emma or a Braun Strowman or even, you know, a Gargano or a Candice LeRae? Like, not really. You know what I mean? And, like, I said, oh, return, cool. And then, like, it's like, oh, who gives a damn about them? You know what I mean? I just, and I'm not saying that as human beings. I'm saying that as their characters, obviously. It's just, I don't feel any investment in them. And I feel like it's just, oh, another person's coming back to kick some ass. You know, it's like, okay, great. They're here to kick ass. Everyone's here to kick ass. That's great. But that's just another criticism I have of kind of the way that he seems to approach and do things. So, you know, whatever, be it what they will. But I have to imagine at Survivor Series, you're going to get a big return, and it is Boston. And, you know, I know Sasha Banks is from there. I almost, as they flashed the graphic on the screen a few times of Shotzi versus Ronda, you know, you guys remember obviously when Sasha Banks was supposed to take on Bianca at SummerSlam, all of a sudden she was no longer available. Becky replaced her, won the championship, whatever. I don't think Shotzi is going to be in this match. I think at Survivor Series, you're going to have some sort of Shayna Baszler backstage beatdown of Shotzi where she's unable to compete. And who's Ronda's mystery opponent? It's Sasha. Because that, I am not at all excited about that Shotzi matchup. And I highly doubt many people are. I think that would be the perfect way to go about it if you're going to do a big return for someone like Sasha. I don't even know if they set it up that way on purpose, but I wanted your thoughts on that.
Well, what do you think of that scenario, Javier? I guess both, do you think it's possible, or and beyond that, even if it's not likely, do you like the scenario if it could happen?
Yeah, I think it's plausible. And yeah, because this does sound like the it was Carmella. It was Carmella who was supposed to be who was in the match, and then against Bianca.
No,
and yeah, this does have
Carmella
that kind
was
of
the replacement. Javier, I hate to interrupt. So remember, Sasha couldn't go. They said, "Who's the replacement?"
Yeah, that's
Carmella.
What I'm saying. She was the replacement, and it was like, "Oh, her," and you know, and then like out came the real person. And this, you could say that this has the same the same feel to that. Only thing is, I get the impression that like that Triple H is a lot higher on Shotzi, so that's the only like pause I would say. But I it would be interesting if I could see that a development like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. Oh, it looks like Brad just dropped. His call went out, so maybe he'll call back in, Javier. If it's not in the cards for Sasha to return, Paula Beck's going to get really tired of people constantly talking about her coming back. When is she coming back? Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, you know. But you know, every scenario, fans of Sasha are going to bring up a scenario where.
On Twitter, there's something I just saw on Twitter. I just got the impression that was leading us, that was meant to lead us away from believing that, oh, she's now further away from coming back than she was previously.
Yeah.
Which to me soundposts that they're trying to, you know, make you look one way while they're doing something else.
Yep. All right. Looks like Brad called back. Brad, you dropped off. We were just talking about the Sasha thing. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I heard the most of what you said there at the end, and sorry I dropped off. But, you know, last thing, I mean, this is very minor, but I agree with Justin that Seth Rollins' promo was weird, and he just looks terrible with that hair. I mean, he looks like he just went swimming in chlorine and then took a hairdryer to it, and it got brushed out with some comb, and it's all knotted. I mean, I think, you know, part of the appeal, you know, I watched with my wife and whatever, and, you know, part of the appeal of Seth is kind of, you know, reasonably handsome, and, you know, he's got this amazing character. I mean, he looks awful with that hair, and I don't like the new look. Not really that important, but I really do think that, you know, we're going to see a Sasha Banks comeback on Saturday. I don't think Shotzi is going to compete in that match. And I'm really excited to listen to the rest of the show, and thanks always for taking the call, guys.
Cool, great. Thanks, Brad. Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add to anything he brought up there, Javier?
No, pretty much, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'll total props for him if that actually ends up being the...
Totally. Yes, totally. Cool. Okay. I want to introduce an email. We might get to more calls too here. Jay from New York said, hey, Wade and Javier, I'm watching Raw, and I wonder what Triple H is doing with Austin Theory, or should I say doing to Theory. Having him cash in on the U.S. champion was dumb, but now he runs from Lashley after hitting him directly in the back with a chair? That makes Theory look incredibly weak. I get it. Lashley's a tough SOB. Still, Theory ran like a cowardly heel. I don't get how that helps improve his place on the show or makes him a credible threat to anyone. Thanks and take care. So, yeah, I mean, that's just something that I think jumped out probably to a lot of people. Another email on Theory here. Hey, team, JB from Detroit. I really don't like what they're doing with Theory after his failed Money in the Bank cash-in. You can't just call some of the new vicious blank and have it be true or really mean anything with a proper story. They tried the same with the Viking Raiders with mild results, to be generous. It's like they just gave Theory this new attitude with no real journey. We're just expected to believe he's vicious now over a two-week period because it's convenient for where they want him to ultimately go. It's lazy booking, in my opinion. Is there a better way to go about this than telling us or having him tell us that he's not what he used to be and he's something new that we should take more seriously? Or other than running from Lashley, is this kind of a good – was that a good turning point for him to have a new attitude because of the cash-in failure and what Lashley did to him, and maybe that kind of sparking him thinking he needs to change?
Ideally, when you're if the story they're trying to tell, ideally you probably would have wanted him to go away for a bit, even if it's only like 2 weeks. And so that basically is the time that he takes to reassess his new personality. Even if you are not seeing it yourself, you know, because back in the day in the territory era, they would actually literally go to another territory and then where they would learn, you know, change there and try new stuff. And then, you know, when they would come back, you know, having, quote unquote, learn new old. But you could do that by just having them, you know, give them 2 week vacation. It's just, you just don't have two things. You don't have, you know, the bodies for a 3 hour show to, you know, you still have to be telling, you know, stories with these people. And also the nature of the story of the cash-in, you needed to actually address that quickly. While you may be seeing as that it was something stupid to do, he rationalized it and he gave a good reason. You may disagree with the reason, but he said that I have no chance against Roman. Roman is surrounded by an army. I cannot take that belt from him with this. And he said that one of the greatest champions who had one of the greatest cash-ins with Seth Rollins, and that would have been like a good, you know, like essentially like I'm doing the same thing this famous guy did, you know, as an FU, but then Lashley was the one who got involved. So he did justify his reasons. You know, you may think that it's stupid and you still got after Roman, but then at that point, it, you know, in his mind, it's not a stupid, decision, which, you know, also adds to the thing where people call, you know, oh, you know, you know, that was stupid. It pisses him off further. There is a level of like, now, you know, you could sell him more as like, I just don't care about my own safety. So I'm now like 100% offense and risking myself without defending myself. And like, that's why I like brutalized Dolph Ziggler. And you could have signposted that, you know, in that way too, would be better ways to do it. But as it is, it's like, you know, it's WWE I think they did enough to signpost the fact that he is changed a bit. Again, that runaway segment that really does not that was not a good look for doing that, you know. So
yeah.
And you know, if it were anybody else, I could understand. Like I do have to go back and watch the Strowman Gunther thing from Friday, because I wasn't really paying that closely attention to it. But like I could understand Gunther, you know, getting that no-sold and then him backing away. The little bit I did see that he runs away, if he's setting up a trap, I could kind of see something like that. And in Gunther's case, because he's facing someone he hasn't faced like on that side, but Gunther's not changing at that point. In the case of Austin Theory, you're trying to signpost him as a badass now. So why put him in that situation? I could understand him running. You know, you hit Lashley with a chair and he no-sold it. I could understand him running. You should have not put him in that position.
And there's a way to have him hit Lashley with a chair. And, you know, let's not no-sell chair shots. So Lashley goes down and then he looks up and he's getting up. He's shaking it off. Theory trash-talks him from 8 feet away. Walks backwards, trash talks some more. Lashley starts coming after him. And, you know, Theory's not running away, but he's backing away. Like, I got my shot and you can barely walk. I rung your bell and I'm going to trash talk you before returning to the safety of the back. I mean, there's a way to do it to not have him just scurry away like a little twerp manager would.
Yeah, I mean, unless, you know, and the thing is that the only saving grace, the only saving grace is if they're going to basically, he's not going to be a more vicious version. He's just going to be more of an opportunist because he did what? 1 second. I'm going to have to mute for a second. If instead of him being like a more vicious character, his character trait is going to be that he is an opportunist and a scumbag, then that's a different thing. But you've already spent a week presenting one version of the character for then you know, and you know what he did. I mean, he didn't like cheat to get up on Ziggler. He was just overwhelmed Ziggler. So if that's what you're going to present him 1 week, presenting him as just like an opportunist, like something that Miz would do. His Miz would run away and throw another character in the way. That's mm-hmm. something that Miz would do. So unless yeah. you're, you know, if you're building another Miz, then yeah, okay, fine. But I mean,
and the irony, Javier, is I think that's what they're trying to change him from. Is I think they felt he was on a Miz course, and the idea is let's switch him to something that has a higher ceiling, or it's just different. I mean, Miz has been successful at being Miz, and any attempt for him to be something, you know, more serious has just not worked for him. I think they think there he can be serious, and they're trying to have him avoid being Miz. So why book him to run away like this?
Yeah, I mean, my only thought is because there were two moments during that thing is when he Lashley was going to like ram him into the corner, and then he pushes away. And normally the person slides off the shoulder and they push the heel into the corner hit the bigger guy into the corner, and that injures the character's shoulder. And then they could have worked that into, well, Lashley is injured going into, you know, has a messed up shoulder going into. So that was where it first stopped. But then Lashley held back, and then there was the chair spot. And what I'm thinking is like, okay, well, what they're likely signposts. I'm just keep saying that. That's like the word of the day for me today. It seems like they're setting up that Theory might end up winning this and winning the title in a way to protect either Lashley or Rollins. I think one of those two is likely going to be doing something higher, and I could see them, you know, planning on having him win. But like in that reverse booking logic, if he's hurting Lashley and he gets over on Lashley on like the go home show. Not that this is necessarily the go-home show, because they might still show up on Friday. If they're, you know, on the go-home show, if he's getting over on Lashley, then, he means that he's going to lose on the other one. You know that reverse boosting they did? I think that might have been why they just didn't let him get over on Lashley, because if he got over on Lashley, you know, it would make it look like Lashley's the one who's going to win, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think they might have been playing that kind of mental mind game that they do with, you know, whoever looks weakest at the go-home show is the one who's likely going to win.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment of where they might be going. Okay, number two from JB. I truly believe we're getting dangerously close to devaluing Riddle to tag team partner with Elias level beyond repair. He's just gone. So often, back and forth between absolute goof to total badass, that I think fans are just unsure how to feel about him. At this point, it leaves everyone rather apathetic. At this point, I'm honestly not even sure if an Orton return and RK-Bro reunion will be enough to recapture the original magic. It's a good point to bring up. Riddle teaming with Elias against Gable and Otis in competitive tag matches. What's your take on what they're doing with Riddle? Is this them just sort of going, you know what, we're going to use Riddle as a popular upper mid-card utility guy, but for reasons, we are going to move away from leaning on him as a top guy. He had his chance to be in title matches, and it was with Roman, and we kind of spent that card, and the Orton thing is the only way we really, you know, that went further than we expected, and we sort of pushed Riddle more than we planned, and with Orton gone, we're going to kind of go back. I mean, is this a window into how Levesque feels about Riddle, or is this really just a placeholder to try to kind of have him lay low, be part of the show until Orton comes back and they can kind of pick up where they left off? And they're not expecting it to hurt him, is my point.
Well, here's the thing. Well, two things. I mean, on a more macro level, I don't understand what's with the modern way of booking, and because this is both MJF and Rollins, they both, you know, they're both involved in these feuds. So Rollins is involved in this blood feud with Riddle. That Riddle wins, yet Rollins, the one who next day wins the U.S. Championship, is in the higher place than what Riddle is on the card. You know, MJF got killed by Wardlow, and he's the one who's the champion. So what is it? What's going on? What's in the water with? Because, like, that just, you know, I can understand, like, every now and then it kind of, you know, makes sense. Not sense, but, like, it works into the story you're trying to tell. But this is happening a lot, because I know this is not the first time it's happened, where the loser is then being booked in a championship match the next week. That's one part of it. But yeah, I mean, the fact that by him, you know, it felt like Riddle was going on to the next stage by beating Rollins. Instead, he regressed to where he was before he got together with Orton. In terms of what they're thinking, I mean, positive, I really liked this match. I don't know what it was about this match. It was I really enjoyed it because the wrestlers involved, it felt like they were in a fight. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't really pick up on any like playing to the camera. It didn't feel like they were playing to the camera. It felt like they were wrestling each other. They were fighting each other. And the quick tags and the way that the two that both Elias and Riddle were interacting with each other kind of made it feel like, you know, they're trying to actually really make them a team. So I'm thinking that that might be what they're going for, is that this is not going to be like, I mean, this is going to probably play off the gimmick thing, but yeah. I think that they're going to actually do something with them as a team, because it kind of felt like, you know, Elias was just going to have enough of them and then turn on Riddle, and it was going to be an Elias-Riddle feud. But the way that they were doing quick tags back and forth and hitting tandem moves makes me think that, okay, maybe they are planning on tag teaming these two together for a little bit, for a longer period of time. What that means for Riddle, what that means for Elias, I don't know, but I did like the intensity that they had in the match. That the match itself didn't feel like they were goofing off. Staying in the match on its own. I agree with that.
Because you know what? Riddle's really good. Otis is really good. Gable is phenomenal. And you know, Elias had one of his better matches. I mean, he did kind of keep up. He didn't stick out as much.
I missed because it's the conversation going to go this direction. But I was going to joke with you saying, are we sure this isn't Ezekiel pretending that he's alive?
Yes, exactly.
You know, so because I mean, yep. and that was part of it, because like he looked good. I mean, he was obviously, the match was obviously carried by Riddle. I mean, he was doing the same thing for Orton, he was doing all the work for Orton. Orton was, you know, getting the high spots there. So he was kind of doing the same thing for Elias. So he was protecting Elias, and Elias was hitting the big moves, and Elias was looking good in the stuff that he was doing. I really think, like, on a Wrestling 101 level, I really, really like this match.
So, that said, that might be one of the reasons they are doing this. You know, hey, yeah. Riddle against Gable and Otis, and Elias is back. Let's get something out of him, and we can do comedy with those two playing off of each other. But does it ultimately hurt Riddle to be with Elias and having even Steven competitive matches with Gable and Otis, who I'm a fan of, and at times they've been pushed, but mostly they're seen as, you know, a step below Miz, I think, in terms of, you know, their chances in a straight up match.
I think that at this point, Chaz and Otis have been in so many even Steven matches that I think you could kind of like be forgiven for that. The question is, I think the question is what they're going to be doing, not in the ring, but what they're going to be doing outside of the ring. What kind of character is Riddle going to be? I mean, the bongo stuff is like another level of stupid that is beyond it's annoying stupid, charming stupid. It's just, you know, people like this don't live in the real world. And what are going to do with Elias and their interaction? I need to see more of that because, you know, they could have a chemistry, you know, like how Jericho and KO had that kind of like back and forth chemistry. They haven't been on camera together in like backstage skits enough for me, you know, to see what the kind of the story that they tell, because if they're an endearing couple and people really get into it, I think people are going to forgive a lot of stuff. They're going to forgive a lot more. They're going to be a lot more forgiving of a 50-50, matchup with Gable and Otis, and considering the fact that Gable and Otis seem to be like the only wrestlers on the actual roster,
they're
literally wrestling like every single week. Seriously, we need to start moving some people in and picking up some more people in to have some more extra bodies.
They are in the category of current workhorses. You know, Kevin Owens at one time was. You know, like, oh, let's get him on every week. He'll give us a good match. Okay, third topic out of three from JB says, what has JBL really given Baron Corbin? What is Corbin's real character? JBL cosplayer? I feel bad for Corbin because I think since his original Lone Wolf gimmick when he debuted on the main roster, he's since been saddled with goofy caricature gimmicks like King Corbin, Happy Corbin, and now Wrestling God Corbin. Can he just be a semblance of a real human being, Corbin? As always, love the show and go VIP. How's this working for you, Javier? What'd you think of more poker with Drew McIntyre showing up conveniently and setting up a one-on-one match, which I thought was solid, but it also felt like it was there to fill TV time because Raw is 3 hours instead of two.
Okay, you want to talk about damage. Let me find it in my notes. So I wrote, you know, when the skits, my notes were short for that. Thankfully, the poker skit was short. Unfortunately, the match was long. The match itself was fine. The match the two wrestlers had was fine. But Drew McIntyre is, and you know what? I'm about to admit that I'm wrong on this. Because for me, Drew McIntyre is one of your possible guys. He is one of your top stars. He is one of the people who is, the possible future after Roman type of person. So Baron Corbin, on the other hand, was with Madcap Moss. His new partnership with JBL is supposed to be maybe rising and make him more serious, but they haven't established him at that level yet, particularly since it seems that he was going into a feud with Tozawa, of all people, who was still wearing his ninja gi last week, and now he's wearing his traditional Spider-Man look. So this is not like a high-level feud that looks like Corbin's being involved in, yet he wrestles Drew McIntyre for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
More than any, particularly in WWE, I feel almost like a hypocrite because, I know sometimes in AEW a lot because, why is Joel Silver and Kenny Omega wrestling, back and forth 15 minutes? And I'm like, that's fine. But for some reason, this one struck out at me as, why is this not, why is he just not finishing Corbin and it's going for 20 minutes? I know there was some outside interference. But then, not only that, but I got to remind people that after his WrestleMania loss, he swore he will never be distracted again.
That's
every
single
goddamn match that Drew McIntyre has.
That's a great point.
In a dumb way. It's not even that someone grabbed his leg. It's that JBL made too much noise climbing the stairs, and this kept him from hitting the Claymore.
Yep.
Drew, you're an idiot, man. I am pulling for you. I want you to be the next John Cena, Roman Reigns. But if they continue booking that, you're a dumbass. I can't get behind you in that case.
I am with you all the way. Dumb baby faces doing dumb things. There's this psychology that I'd rather play to the crowd or choose to be distracted before I get blindsided or my move isn't as effective or I leap off the top rope and the heel has a chance to move. I'd rather not just have the heel move, but I'd rather pause or be distracted before I fail. And now you have agency in that failure, as opposed to the heel just, countering your move. And there's way more, losing a match because somebody, you run to the top rope and you go for a move, but it turns out the heel was fresh enough to move out of the way. That's way more honorable way to lose than, or to miss a move, not necessarily lose, than taking your time, walking to the ring apron, playing to the crowd, egging on cheers, climbing to the top rope, looking around, preening for the camera, copyright Sammy Guevara, and then doing the move, and then the heel moves. And same thing with distractions. I'd just rather have Drew get hit with get blindsided than be distracted. Caught by surprise than go out of his way to be distracted. I don't get why they do that.
I understand nuance, and I'm a big, big fan of nuance because not every distraction is the same. Because, sometimes you'll see a match, and then, some people are like, who don't see the nuance, it's like, oh, well, there's a distraction, the match is horrible. But not every distraction is the same. Brock Lesnar comes onto the ring ropes, you're going to say, what the hell's going on? Because this guy's a danger and might ruin my day, So I can understand that. I can understand certain things. But when you have an older manager who he just called an elder statesman, almost in a mockingly way, just make noise. Okay. And this is not the first time it's happened to Drew McIntyre, where it was just the noise that distracted him. I'm like, are you a skittish rabbit?
That'd be a great gimmick.
At this point, I'm like, Drew, hey, is this what we're booking for the ending? Let's, trip me. Fine, trip me. Hit me in the back with a cane or something. do something like that. Do something physical to actually give me a reason to lose. Don't, like, just step three times loudly. And here's the other thing. If you do change, you know, let's say, like, okay, what's going on, and you do change view, be ready. Don't just go back to what you were doing previously. Reset, because that's what, like, a normal human being would do, is, like, you took your eye off the ball. Let me make sure everything's still in the correct, you know, everything's still going to go on the right way, as opposed to, you know, like, just letting me, you know, just let's, you know, just because I paused for 5 seconds, nothing's changed. I just really, I mean, it's really frustrating. And particularly Drew McIntyre, because Drew McIntyre has fallen victim to this a few times, and I think ultimately that does hurt his character.
So now, as a follow-up, what do you think about Drew being distracted so easily? No, I'm kidding. I'm with you on the passion, Javier. Okay, Zach in Texas says, barely an hour into Raw, and I know how Wade felt watching my Cowboys obliterate the Vikings. Man, people are just cruel. Seeing Sheamus abuse Dominic and then bro kick his head to the fifth gave me hope this might be an okay show, but Triple H hates me. Because WWE feels compelled to own everything Mia Yim owns, her name had to change her name to Meechin, I think. The announcers couldn't seem to decide. Hunter remixed Johnny Gargano's beloved entrance song and then for inexplicable reasons fed him to flipping Omos. I thought Omos was done after he lost to Braun at Blood Money 9. Of course, Austin Theory had to go over Mustafa Ali. That really felt like a personal shot. Ali losing to a guy like Theory just sucks. Watching Theory is like if I transported myself back to 1987 with the knowledge that Hulk Hogan is a racist and try to cheer him. I just can't turn my brain off. JBL and Rocka Corbin are just death. In the end, they put off the Becky return to Friday, so I suffered through the show for nothing. Can we at least agree that Raw proved that clear and heels do not a show make? That clear and heels? What did he mean there?
I have.
I'm not sure. Sorry, Zach. We didn't talk about the Omos thing with Gargano. I don't know. I mean, I guess was Gargano distracted, Javier? Did they give him a distraction? I don't think they did.
Did it do something? Did they? No. Well, I mean, it didn't lead to the match because what? No, because I mean, he got the better of Omos. He's the first non-big guy to knock him down, I think, and then take him down with those kicks and like wear him down and give you that hope.
Yeah.
I actually liked it. I mean, I thought it was effective use of Omos. Where, you know, but also while keeping him like a monster. I thought this was an effective use of, you know, having him like a mercenary shows up every now and then, and you're keeping him strong to do stuff. My brother's a big fan of Omos. I'm not kidding you. He texted me during his, while he was watching. He said, dude, I must be almost his only fan. So he's a fan of him. I don't have a hate on for Omos, and I think he does have a role that he can play, which is pretty much exactly the role he played today. And like I said, it felt like Gargano knows a way to beat him, and it was just that, you know, he didn't wear him down enough, and when he went down after him, he got caught in the choke slam and then got taken down, and Omos is a monster, so that was the hit that required to take him down. So. I thought it was well used. This is about as like what you kind of would want a monster like that to do.
But he still pinned Gargano clean in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean it is almost, and I mean, and that's it's like if you're gonna have almost be a monster, and I mean I wouldn't have him wrestle every, you know, show up every day and just show up in these kind of situations, and but yeah, I mean and. I'm guessing that Gargano's not going to be your top. I don't expect Gargano at this point to be in your top top circle. I think he's going to be definitely just like a lower level gatekeeper doing stuff. Maybe you could heat him. I mean, he's got a great personality. Maybe you could heat him up later, for a run or something. But I think he's more there to be like a coach for the people as they move up to NXT for him to, you know, help out and stuff.
Yeah, just I don't know. I think before you do, I think this defines him down a little bit because that's something that you would do to Chad Gable or Ali, but not Daniel Bryan, for instance.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm putting him in the category of slightly higher than. I would actually put him in the same. I think I have G- Gable. I know Gable's lost a lot, but lately he's been because I am dividing Gable's experience of like Gable, Hunter Gable, and then Vince McMahon Gable. Vince McMahon Gable was more of a joke even in the ring, but the Triple H Gable, he's a joke outside of the ring, but he's you know he's held up. Which I know I've said that when we were talking about earlier about the Riddle situation, you know. There hasn't been that much of a change in Gable, so Gable still kind of has the stink of loser on him. Mm-hmm. But if you just mark the and I know this is it's kind of unfair and life this is why people see it because people just don't remember the longer that people have him earmarked as a loser and haven't seen the change since Triple H. But he's shown and Otis has shown that they're more capable wrestlers while still being pseudo goofballs on the outside. I think it might be time to I think they should have tweaked them enough to again, I'm going to use the word again, signpost that they've changed a little bit and make them more serious and still keep them in the gatekeeper role, but just say that, hey, look, these are capable guys. I think it's with Gable, with Gargano, I think Gargano is just slightly above, definitely above Mustafa. But not by much, and around the same level as the current Gable, a little bit higher than the perceived Gable.
Yeah, yeah, and I think with Gargano's history and Triple H seeing him at his finest in NXT, I just would have saved him in this spot, for another time. I think people are going to remember that. I think it defines him down. I think it lowers the ceiling on his push, even if the intention and the attempt to push him more. I think fans now look at him as more just a good utility guy, like you said, a good hand, a guy who can help some of the people. Yeah.
Gargano's through line from NXT, it follows his through line because, that's what happened in NXT. He was the top guy in NXT and then essentially, quote-unquote, retired and became like the mid-card gatekeeper kind of guy when he was with the Gargano way, became more comedic act. And it just felt like they just transferred that version of Gargano over here. When, kind of like how Bayley, they could have basically reset Bayley and told the same story they told in NXT over the main roster. Instead, they just basically, transported the full finished Bayley over to an audience that didn't have experience with her. And the same thing with Gargano, because, I haven't had that as much of an issue with Gargano in the way that he carries himself because I followed him from the NXT period. But, yeah, if you introduce the character like this, he's coming across more of like a pompous jerk and jackass, in the way of the stuff that he had been saying. If you're not experienced with his personality, his brand, basically, and who he is, for the people who didn't watch NXT, I could see it be a lot more abrasive. I know you did see NXT, Wade, but I'm just saying that and it's also a character trait that's not, again, attractive to everybody. So
yeah.
I could have said, which I could have you not liking the character. I personally am fine with it because, I like the little snarky, jerky kind of like baby face. But, you need to earn it, and he hasn't.
Yeah, yeah. He also brought up Dominic. We haven't talked much about the opening segment.
I love Dominic. Dominic is one of my favorite members of the roster. It's just the stuff that he's so confident when he's around the people, and then when he runs away. He's the one who runs away.
Yep.
He's the one who runs away. Like the way he ran away, and then out comes the he is playing his role pitch perfect. He's surrounded by people who carry matches for him. He takes his bumps look good, so I don't have a problem with that. It's just like the smugness of and the fact that it drives some people crazy. Cause that's like a dark secret of mine that when something silly, the Dominic Mysterio kind of character, people get legit angry and want to angry and want to see him suffer. I'm that gets me in the feels. Cause that to me is you're kind of doing what you're supposed to be doing. The rest is kind of doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I didn't even get to my question because you're just so enthusiastic to compliment Dominic, but I love it. You can't not watch him. You better before someone gets hurt, y'all better go back to SmackDown. Colin Ray, a deadbeat dad, but then the bug-eyed chicken shit heel who's running away in the match and It's fun. Rhea Ripley is having fun with this. It just, yeah, Dominic's been a real pleasant surprise in this. Well, Javier, you know, I think you remember, I was like, when they're doing the breakup angle, I think Dominic can be a really good punk-ass heel. Like, I saw it in him, or I had a hunch, at least, you know, from what he had been able to show acting-wise, and I think he has good instincts in front of the camera, you know, as the you know, kind of not dopey kid, but the innocent, wide-eyed newcomer with his dad being a legend and big shoes to fill and I want to belong. And that, you know, that was his role, and he played it well. But that doesn't mean that's who he is and that he can't be somebody else. And he's shown he can be somebody else. And it's been a real blast. And, you know, so yeah. So any other thoughts on the opening segment and the men's war game hype and how they, you know, kind of parlay that into a sixth man that helped fill, you know, 15 minutes of TTC time too.
No, I mean, sorry, mute again. Yeah, I mean, they also had that brawl too, which I thought was I liked the brawl between the OC and Edge Judgment Day that went into the back and then worried about whose car that was. And that's one of the things I've, because who was it? Someone mentioned about the Triple H, not like the one thing I really like about the Triple H era is how you had the OC in the opening, who are actually involved with AJ Styles and his group, but here they are saying, "Hey, this is our house." To the people who are invading and the Brutes, they have their match. So you're mixing things up, and it feels like it's a living thing. It's not like everybody who's feuding with each other and like locked in this one segment, and nothing else like cross pollinates. Because then you know you had them then confront AJ Styles in the back, and then that broke up into a fight, and then the two women who were in that fight, one of them is Rhea Ripley, who's going to be in the female war games. So like everything is kind of interconnected. And I think that's one of the strengths of what Triple H does, because it makes the show overall feel more important as opposed to a collection of segments. And I think this helps get over stuff like the men's war game, because it's existing in the world. And it's not like, hey, we're just going to gather these guys, do this thing. Some people have like, you know, are, you know, involved in their own little stories and stuff. So, you know, I do like that. Not sure if I answered your question, but.
The question is just the opening segment, you know, just what you thought of the hype for War Games.
And, yeah, so, and that's yeah. the thing. It kind of, because that's the thing, the opening segment kind of like had like tentacles that spread throughout the entire show, so.
Yeah.
And tied the whole thing together.
What do you think of the job they did hyping the pay-per-view itself? We had two instances of them running through the lineup. I think people know when Survivor Series is and what the matches are, and they don't. It's weird to say that, but they don't always do a great job the week going into an event, you know, premium live event. I think really driving home, here's what's happening, and the card's coming together a little bit late, later than usual, perhaps for WWE, so soon after the Saudi Arabia show, and trying to assemble the War Games with some TV storylines to keep things to keep the developments part of the week to week drama. But overall, I mean, I think they've done, even if what they're working with isn't great, because we covered that earlier, you know, the War Games feels manufactured. I think given, if you looked at the lineup sheet, you know, a month ago or 3 weeks ago, and you said, you know, what's a good scenario for how they really drive home and hype this lineup and build it up through TV developments, I think they've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job in terms of, like, if you're promoting for a PLE and not a pay-per-view. You know, in terms of
such,
like,
such is modern WWE. I mean, that's what they
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, and that's the thing, because like the only time they really promote, like if you're heading into a pay per view, is SummerSlam and SummerSlam, WrestleMania, and the Saudi shows. Sadly, are the only times that they really promote, like, you know, heavy what the main event is and stuff like this. This is, you know, again, like more of an attraction. We're gonna get to see War Games. The people are almost. I mean, really, the people almost feel like they're secondary to the fact that it's War Games. But, like, I think they did enough for, like, hey, I've got Peacock. I might as well watch it on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And I bought $450 for it? Maybe not, but, you know.
Right,
I got Peacock. So, I mean, and that's kind of like the nature of the beast right now.
It is. And, I mean, there were times pay-per-views felt that way, too, because they just, you know, were doing too many and they didn't have a strong lineup. But it does sort of feel like they're settling for it. It's a server who gets their tip ahead of time instead of afterwards. You know, they've got their money ahead of time, so it's like we're going to go through the motions of being a good server. But, you know, we know we kind of aren't going to – we've made what we're going to make. And it's just, you know, there is a human nature aspect to it with how WWE approaches these things. Javier, anything else in your notes? I just thought this 90 minutes flew by, but I did want to keep this a little shorter today. What
I
else?
Mean, that was a mistake if you had me on. That was the other thing that Zach mentioned. Meechan, they still keeping her. Looks like they're still keeping Mia Yim. Meechan, I believe. And fact check me on this because I'm not 100% sure. It's been a long time since I believe Meechan means crazy. And they put it in quotes. So it's crazy Mia Yim. Okay. So it looks like it's a nickname. It might be to move her away from Mia Yim. What they're doing. But Meechan just I believe it's crazy. I'm not 100% sure on that because it's not Japanese. It's Korean. So let me see. The three women who are possible. Like I mentioned, Becky Lynch, Candice LeRae, and Beth Phoenix. I'm assuming Becky Lynch is the one who's the most likely.
Yes, I think so. I do.
Yes, I think that's about it. The thing is that the too long of a show. It felt like they really padded out a lot of the wrestling because it felt like a lot of the wrestling was multi-segmented. And I think that might be one of the reasons why that Corbin and match went on forever. I think that's about it.
That's been part of the Levesque era is longer matches. And there's not as much density to the segments because he's eliminated a lot of the kind of nonsense and silliness. So
I do have one question. I mentioned earlier that I think there's a sleight of hand going on with Mustafa Ali. Do you think that's the case, or do you think that it's just that, you know, he's in his cartridge ready to go?
I don't think they're up to anything with him, unfortunately. I'm not ruling out, and I hope you're right, but my tendency is to think this is the role that they see him in until his deal's up.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Javier. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and look out for the primer first at PLE Survivor Series. So.
Yes. At pwtorch.com. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to y'all Wednesday night. Oh, no, we'll talk to you sooner on the flagship tomorrow with Jason Paul, so get those emails in.
Yeah, and